when I first got to camp this year and I, you know, looked around and started getting to know you, and then Monday night I had my first opportunity to minister to you from the Word, I thought, you know, these kids are uncannily quiet. But you know what? That doesn't mean you're not deep. Doesn't mean you're not listening. Matter of fact, I have not had one disturbance from one camper this camp when I'm speaking. You guys and gals have been perfect kids. I mean it. Now, maybe the camper counselors won't say so because they have to live with you, but while I've seen you, you've been the most well-behaved camp I've been around, and I thought you deserved that. God bless you. Praise the Lord. Brother Wampler, thanks again for letting me come and be with you people. Brother Wampler's been so kind, and he's such a great guy, and I know you get... Let's give him another hand. Come on, this is our DCAP. Yeah. Amen. Amen. And Sister Wampler's been such a champ with us. She just made everything so nice, and we love and appreciate her, too. So let's give her a hand. Now for all the little kids. Oh, I get it. Hey, did you bring Bibles to camp? Did you? How many of you got your Bibles? Well, you know, that's pretty good. Some of you held up baseballs and gloves. And turn to the Song of Solomon. Hey, we're going to sing tonight, huh? Well, not quite. The Song of Solomon. Hey, Brother Metzger, God bless you. Glad to have you and your lovely wife and little girl here. And all the visitors, we're just delighted you came. God bless you. We hope tonight something very special happens. But don't take offense, visitors, if I kind of ignore you, because really it's the campers I'm interested in. Oh, we love you. But if you think this message doesn't come on like it ought to in the church, well, don't worry about it. You see, we're not in church, we're at camp. That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you what, these kids are on the same wavelength I'm on tonight. I can feel it already. The Song of Solomon, some of you don't know where it is. We'll go to Ecclesiastes and turn right. And if all else fails and you're in a Schofield, turn to page 705. Get it. It's titled The Song of Songs. Verse 1. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Now you see, guys, Solomon was a songwriter too. You know, he was a king, you remember? And he was a proverb writer. He wrote proverbs. Now, Solomon, he didn't do as good on his songs as he did his proverbs, because 1 Kings tells us he wrote 3,000 proverbs, and I think most of them are listed in the book of Proverbs. But he wrote 1,005 songs. But this is the only song that made it. You know, he probably wrote 1,004 and almost gave up, but when he wrote number 1,005, it hit the top 10, and that's when you quit, you know, when you're ahead. And here it is recorded for us. Boy, is it a song, man. This is a love song. You like love songs? I like a love song. Sing me one more of those somebody done somebody wrong songs. Oh, yeah. Look how this one starts. Let him kiss me. Now, this is a little Shunammite maiden speaking. And this little Shunammite maiden, she got it all together. Because she says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. For thy love is better than wine. Because of the savor of thy good ointments, thy name is like ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. Draw me after thee, and we will run. The king hath brought me into his chambers, and we'll be glad and rejoice in thee. We will remember thy love more than wine. The upright love thee. Boy, that's a pretty neat song, wouldn't you say? I don't know the tune, but brother, I know the beat. This song It's got overtones. You understand what I mean? It means more than what you see. To begin with, old Solomon wrote it, and I believe being one of his best songs, it probably came from experience, you know. He's probably writing this from a moment in his life that he looks back on and remembers with great joy. You know, Solomon, now theologians who are historians, they dig up all the evidence they can on certain things. Come to find out, Solomon may have been king as a teenager, maybe 19 years old or 20 or 21, young fella. I mean, how would you like to have a, you know, a 19-year-old president? Cool, wouldn't it? No more school. All the gas you want for your car. All the cars you want, no license necessary. Every freeway's a drag strip. It'd be nice to have it, you know. But it's really not practical because, come on, guys and gals, you got to admit it, that little bit of gray around the temple of some people, which me and Harvey ain't got yet. I got more than you do, though. One of my temples is gone. You can't say that. Forget it. If my hairpiece turns gray, saints, we got problems. I'm getting old. Or my wife did throw me in the pond. Now, if a young man's going to be president, can you imagine him walking through the Rose Garden with, you know, with his minister of finance and his minister of commerce and his, you know, federal aviation administration ministers and his ministers of war and his ministers of education, his welfare ministers and housing, urban development, and CIA agents hanging their nose over every other tree, and the FBI keeping tabs on the CIA, who's keeping tabs on the president, who's keeping tabs on the FBI. Can you imagine a teenager enjoying that, and right while he's got his mind on sweet Mary Lou, I love you, here comes the minister of finance and he says, Mr. President, yes sir, you might need to know we're going bankrupt. That's okay, man, it's okay. If there's enough for Mary Lou's ring, everything's cool. You know, the only thing that matters is, well, how do you get rid of all this, you know when you've got all these people? Well, at that age, you're not interested in being tied down to all this system. And isn't this the top, you know, everybody knocks the system and the kids don't like it. I don't blame them. The older you get, the more you become part of it. And then it hurts when it knocks because it's knocking on you. And the little guy, you know, just young fella, he'd far rather be out there, you know, on the outside. So maybe he feigns the call of nature and he steps behind the trees over there, and when no one's looking, turns his coat wrong side out, jumps over the wall, and away he goes. Because, I mean, with his coat wrong side out, who'd know he was a king? You know, he looks like a pauper, seams showing, and down the country lane he goes, throwing rocks and ponds, kicking beer cans, clickety-clack on fence posts with sticks, you know, being a boy. A boy wants to be a boy. Don't make him a man till he wants to be a man. That's the way I feel. I feel like when you hurry it up too much, it warps him. And if you let the Spirit of the Lord direct his life, come on, listen, gambers, because you'll never be a man without God. You may be 90 years old, but you're not a man till you got God. And, you know, instead of trying to tie them down to all this massive obligation and make them something they aren't until it's time to be what they should be, he's out, you know, kicking cans and having a good time. I mean, no one knows who he is. And out, you know, on the little road, out in the field out there in the vineyard is a little old girl, a little Shulamite maiden, and she's picking grapes. Now, you know that if she owned the vineyard, she wouldn't be picking the grapes, you know. I mean, when you got it, flaunt it. Let someone else do the work, you know. So she's obviously a slave girl. And here comes this little king. Now, the wind's blowing to my right. So she was downwind from him. And right when she's picking some of those grapes, you know, it talked about his ointment poured forth. She says, I smell a man. Yes, I do. I smell him. He, you know, I mean, he had put on a little English, or rather Jewish leather, you know, and he smelled good, you know. He bobbing down the country road, and she gets a whiff of him, and she says, oh, man, oh, his ointment poured forth. And then before she's ever seen him, you know, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Now, I mean, let's get to the point, you know. It's like kissing on the first date. Girls, they hadn't even had a date yet. and she's wanting him to kiss her, you know, hot lips Susie. And she's out there, she forgets the vineyard, you know, she's looking for this man. Now there's been a few times I smelled a man smell like a man, and if Pete Rose thinks that's what a man should smell like, he can have it. Today I smelled a few men. Ugh. You ought to be, you know, umpiring behind them, downwind, every time they swing. Well, I'll tell you what's funnier. I'm up for the girls, too. Wow. But shouldn't we wear perfumes and things? I like that. Sure I do. I like, you know, my wife, I buy her Chanel number 5. You ever heard of Chanel number 5? Hey, boy, that's love potion number 9. Boy, I dig this stuff, you know. I used to go get it for her. Before we were ever married, I bought her Chanel. Well, I dig the smell of it, you know. I never got too close to it, but first date, I said, I love you. You know, she knocked me half my head off. You know, these guys thought they had it rough today. I said, welcome to Hawaii. Whack! Forget it. And, well, after I married, I continued to buy her the supply. And I just like the stuff. I went over into Vietnam, and it's cheaper over there, so I sent home tons of it. And, you know, I was injured there in Vietnam, and as a result, well, they sent me to Japan, as we told you last night. You know, I was in a coma for a long time in there, in and out, you know, fluctuating, but in and out of a coma. And I was all bombed out, you know, in a coma, laying there more dead than alive. And here came this little nurse fluffing up the pillows, and she changed the IV bottle on the tube that went into my arm and tucked me in. And when she's bent over me, in a coma, my nose caught a whiff of Chanel number 5 she was wearing. And it brought me out of a coma, sweetheart. And I reached up and I put my arms around because I thought it was my wife. That was the same exact smell I was accustomed to concerning my little lady. And I put my arms around her and I tried to kiss her. And I want you to know, I got my eye open and I looked at her. If I could have crawled through the pores of the sheet, she was still hanging on the ceiling, y'all. And I said, sorry. She said, look, sailor, you're not ready for that yet. Well, the point is this. I got accustomed to the smell. Have you ever walked into a church that was empty and for some reason you felt like you just wanted to kneel down and pray? Have you ever come into the tabernacle or even last night, didn't we get whiffs of the ointment poured forth? Do you know what I'm talking about? You see, this isn't Solomon who turned his coat wrong. It's Jesus, man. Who do you think left the azure halls of glory and became his man and walked the streets of dirt when he was accustomed to streets of gold? Who do you think left the kingdom to be like us? Oh, didn't we catch the fragrance of his ointment, the anointing? That's what the word Christ means, the anointed one. That's why Jesus is the Christ. He is the anointed one. There are times my spiritual nostrils catch a whiff of him. And you know something? Campers smell good because I think he's here right now. You understand me? Huh? Well, now, love responses are natural. The reason she wanted him to kiss him or her with the kisses of his mouth was because you only have one mouth. And that means when you're kissing one, you can't be kissing two at the same time. Unless, mister, you got a big mouth. See, there is how would you like, you know, here comes the bride, you've dated her, and oh, what a wonderful gal, been engaged 14 months. She walks down the aisle, and the preacher says, I pronounce you man and wife, you may now salute your bride. You fold it, lift up that veil, and she goes, gotcha. Who wants to, you know, blow a kiss? Hey, am I not right? The kiss of the mouth is the most expression kiss. Now, don't proof this after service, please, but am I not right? Well, see, she wanted to know she had him all for herself. This is the beautiful thing about Jesus, campers. Sometimes we don't even recognize that he's the King of Kings. And While we should always recognize that he is the splendorous King of Kings, aren't you glad you love him because of who he is, not what he is? I love Jesus because Jesus is Jesus. I love him if he'd have never died for me and just remained in glory, it'd be a different story. But the fact that he loved me enough to turn his coat wrong side out and be like me, you see, he loved me first. That's why I love him. Yeah. I was sitting in an airplane the other day. I was flying down to El Paso. I was preaching a convention down there. And I was sitting on a plane and I was getting all my thoughts together again, you know, to relate, you know, recount my message to the people. And I was reading my Bible. All of a sudden, you know, beautiful things begin to happen. I could feel every word I was reading. It was coming alive to me. I couldn't help it, man. Tears began to run down my eyes. And I looked out that window and there was this big earth spread out. It was beautiful. I whispered, Jesus, you are beautiful. I love you. And it seemed like I caught a little fragrance of his presence, you know, just a whiff. I mean, he was in that airplane with me. I raised my hands up, tears, and I said, praise the Lord. And the stewardess dropped a little bottle of whiskey she's trying to serve the guy beside me. Scared him half to death. But love responses are natural. Now, I'll enjoy watching you guys and gals, you know. You tickle me to death. I see you standing down here, you know, getting an ice cream. You know, be real. You're going to be a big spender, dude. You buy her an ice cream, you know. He's licking the ice cream and he doesn't know what to do. You know, he's standing kicking rocks, you know, dirt flying, getting all over her, shooing away flies, kicking rocks. She says, thank you. Oh, no sweat, baby. Glad to do it. Yeah, cool, honey. Mm-hmm. Boy, it's out of sight, man. Yeah, I dig it, gal. Wow, fantastic. Nobody knows what they're talking about. The fact is, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's the fact you're trying. That's what counts. You get through 15 minutes, you've repeated yourself 15 times, and you don't know what you said the first time, much less a 15th. But when you leave and go your separate ways, each of you know so much more about the other that no way could we sit down with pencil and paper and describe how you learned it. Campers, please hear me. Man, there are ways, times that I feel like I make such a fool of myself trying to show my love to Jesus. And I know there are times it seems immature to other people. And maybe it's all wrong the way I go about it. But you know what, campers? It's the fact I'm trying that makes Jesus so happy. There are times I'm not, you know, graced with pulpit etiquette. But the fact that I love him seems to make up for the difference. Campers, do you understand? Am I just batting the breeze? You understand me? I mean, boys came to me. Boys or, you know, young men came to me last night. Brother Reaver, can we talk to you a minute? They cornered me and they just unloaded on me. And they were going about it all wrong. What do you expect? I ain't said you're going about it wrong. I said, it's the fact that you're trying, the fact that you care right now that tells me it's going to work out. And it's already begun, hadn't it, guys? It's already started working. Feelings have already started moving. Well, they said, draw me. We will run. Now, you know, there is that special part of falling in love, you know, when she acts a little coy. You know what I mean? Like she doesn't really care if you're there or not. Of course, when you walk out the door, she's tearing the screen off to find out what happened. Oh, what did I do wrong? But this coy attitude is perfectly normal. You get the cold shoulder. It's okay, give one back. It scares them to death. They said, draw us. Draw me, she said, and we'll run. Now, in other words, she said, We're not going to be content to walk. We're not going to sit around. We're going to run after you. Now, this is the fun part of love. This is the fun part. This is, you know, the expressions that make love beautiful. There's a story told I want to share with you tonight. I guess I could call it a 1977 parable. Now, it's not in the Bible because Jesus didn't tell this story. But I tell you what, if you listen real close, maybe he did. Maybe he did. It's a story about a king who had a big kingdom, so big he had to send ambassadors, you know, to these far outlying regions. And this little country down there was just they were just mean and full of the devil. And every time an ambassador come, they'd kill him. They'd send another, they'd kill him. Send another, and they'd kill him. They just didn't have old big Kissinger in their day, did they? Send another, and they'd kill him. Finally, the king was out of ambassadors, you know. It's one way to get rid of them. So he said, I know what I'll do. He said, I'll send my son, because when my son gets there, they will respect him as they would myself. So they got the son all fixed up, and his horse loaded up, and away he went. But when the little village heard the son was coming, the king's son was coming, they said, if we kill him, then the king has no one left to send, and it'll all be ours. But a half-wit in the little village said, maybe you ought not kill him without a cause. Concoct some excuse to kill him. Now, anybody with any wit at all would know better than to try. A half-wit comes up with some kind of idea that makes it look like it was legitimate. Here comes the king's son. They've got everything planned. Just as he approaches the gates swing wide. Creak. And here he comes on his horse, clippity-clop, clippity-clop. And they pull off their coats, man, and they lay them down. And they lay down palm leaves. And oh, everybody's hot. And they got fans, and they're fanning him, you know, been long trip, and they're giving him water. Oh, blessed be the king that cometh in the name of the Lord. Oh, hallelujah, hoopla, and all this stuff. He thought, nice guys. I think they like me. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop. Hooray, the king has made it. I mean, calling the king, make him feel good, you know. Really, he is the king. I mean, he has the authority of the king. They come to the banquet hall, and they help him down, and he steps into this lavish banquet, and oh, wow, candelabra and everything. I used to think you ate it, but then I found out it's candles, and it, you know, lights up so you can see what you're eating. Boy, they've got everything. Boy, it's out of sight type banquet, you know, like we'll have tomorrow or Friday morning or Friday afternoon, whatever. Oh, it was beautiful. And did he eat? Oh, everything was good. And at the conclusion of the meal, here they came with great big boxes and gifts and little boxes and gifts. And he looked at that, his heart, man, he said, this is beautiful. All this good stuff. And then it dawned on him, I don't have anything to give them. I mean, what am I going to give them? Now, you know, in some countries of the world, if you receive a gift and you don't return a gift of equal or greater value, you don't get any more gifts. You know, same thing as Christmas in America. Forget it. And the king's son suddenly knew. This was the trap they set for him. They're going to kill me, he said. They're going to kill me. Because I don't have a gift. And in desperation to think of something to give them, he grabbed a pencil and paper, you know, and he began to write. And he wrote a little note, and he handed it to the host, and he said, I would like to give you a gift in return. And the host looked at the paper, and he didn't bother to read it, just wadded it up. And he said, you give us paper and we give you lavish gifts, banquets and praise and honor. And they lunged for him to kill him, but he had already planned his escape, and out the window onto his horse he jumped, and away he went into the wild blue yonder to live happily ever after. Well, it's not the end of the story, because you see what happened is, now kids, you've got a good batting average. Don't blow it. They weren't prepared for that. And he got away, but looking out from the windows, looking in from the outside, were three gnarled, miserable, pathetic, slinky, slimy, yucky, hags. You ever seen a hag? These were the grubbiest hags you've ever seen. Sweetheart, don't get mad. Just keep your victory. These were the ugliest hags. And one of them looked in and she saw that piece of paper. And from her position, she could see what was written on it. And she said to her fellow hags, number hag number two and hag number three, she said, girls, we're rich. And the old hag number two and hag number three said, what do you mean rich? And she said, wait a minute. Out came that piece of paper as they were sweeping out and cleaning up. And she picked it up and unfolded it. And she said, I told you we're rich. And they looked and said, rich? Look at our dirty clothes, our straggly hair, our gnarled, arthritic fingers. We're not rich. She said, yes, we're rich. Rich. Because look at the note. And she read it. This is what the note said. To the bearer upon demand shall be granted the desire of his heart. Signed the king's son and had the seal of the king's ring on it. She said, we're rich. They said, but we're not rich. I mean, who's going to honor this? She said, the king will honor it. Let's take it to his kingdom. They said, it's too far. We can't do it. We'd die getting there. She said, girls, we're going to die anyway. I mean, look at us. You think we can go on living like this? So they folded the little note up. Away they went. Well, it took them a long time, and they were about to give up so often you wouldn't believe it. And their feet were burning, and they were looking worse and worse, you know. And finally, they crossed up over the last hill, down the last valley, and there was the most beautiful kingdom you've ever seen, spread out, glistening, golden, gorgeous, beautiful. Their heart beat. They said, we made it. We made it. And they went up, and there was a big gate, and they knocked on the gate. Knock, knock, knock. And a little door opened in the inside, and a little porthole there, and the guy said, what is it? Yuck, he said. Ugh. Who are you? What do you want? And they said, hag number one being the elected spokesman, we will see the king. And he said, oh, you will you? What makes you think the king will see you? And she pulled out this little piece of paper that had been folded and unfolded and yellowed by the sun and by the dirt of the trip. And, oh, it was just barely hanging together and little lines, you know, little marks marked what meant so much to them. And you following me? And oh, what in the world, they thought. What a kingdom. And they handed it to him, and he opened it up, and he read it. He got a sober look on his face, and he said, oh, well, you wait here. And he ran, and he said, oh, king, live forever. Oh, king, live forever. Oh, king. The king said, okay, I live forever, baby. What's the problem? You know, what you got there? He said, hey, I got a note. And it says, to the king, said, let me see it. And he handed it to the king, and the king looked at the note, and he said, what is this, son? Who sat on his right hand? Not on his right hand. At his right hand. He said, it's on his right hand. He can do a thing left-handed, you know. Sitting at his right hand, he said, yes, father. He said, son, what is this note? And the son, he said, why, father, that's the promise I gave those people. He said, someone must have found it and they kept it. He said, father, it's still valid. It's valid. Everything I said, I'm willing to keep. He said, let's see who brought it. So the guard ran out and he opened the gates up. And in come these nasty, gnarled, slimy, yucky hags. And the guard said, now girls, follow me in a straight line and don't touch anything. So they followed him into the kingdom, you know. Got into this, these old hags, they never saw such a, what? Beauty just emanating from the walls. The plaster seemed to sing praises. The chandeliers, oh, what gorgeous, voluptuous beauty. Their hearts beating, and they entered into this one special room that seemed to have a beautiful fragrance about it. What a beautiful place. And they walked in, and the king looked down, and he said, yuck, what's that? And the guard said, oh, king, live forever. I told you. I tried to tell you. They brought the note. He said, come a little closer. Here they came a little closer. He looked and he said, "Okay, you nasty, dirty hags, what do you want?" Hag number three just couldn't stand it. She said, "Oh, King, I want to live in your kingdom." He said, "You mean live in this kingdom?" "Yes, old king, live forever, old king, live forever." He said, "I will, honey, but you mean live in this kingdom?" "That's right," she said. He said, "Son, are you sure that this is your signature?" "Oh, father, that's my signature." Father, she asked for it. She got it. And so he said, "Okay, guards, take these hags and take them out." A mansion on the hilltop. Why, isn't that what everybody wants? And hag number one and hag number two said, "Oh, King, wait just a minute. We didn't say we want to live in a mansion on a hilltop." Hag number three wanted to live in a mansion on a hilltop. So away went hag number three to get her mansion on a hilltop. But hag number one, hag number two stood there, and hag number two just couldn't wait. She said, "Oh, King, live forever. I want to ask if I can please live in your palace. I want to live right here in this here building. I want that room right there. Build my mansion next door to him. I want to live right there in that room." Did you say in this room? Whew. You mean that behind that door you want to live? "Yes, old king, live forever. Man, I've got to have that. I don't know, old king. It says to the bare bone demand. Son, are you sure?" "Yes, father, I'm sure." She asked for it. She got it. "Okay, okay," he said. "Guards, take her by the health department. Get her a bath and move her in." And hag number one said, "Old king, I just want to ask you a question." He said, "No, no, you just go with them." "Old king, I didn't ask to live in that little room. I want to ask." "Oh," he said, "ask a question? Is that all you want to do?" She said, "Can I ask you a question? I mean, it says to the bare bone of man, should begin to desire his heart." He said, "Okay, counselors, advisors, wise men." She said, "Oh, no, 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 king. You can answer my question." Well, he said, "You mean?" "Yes," she said, "just answer." "Okay," he said, "well, what's your question?" She said, "King, live forever?" "Yes," he said, "I will." It's about your son. "Is he married?" Now, you know, this hag is the one that has only one tooth, and you know, one tooth is worse than no teeth, you know. She's the one that has flies circling her head and gnarled and yucky. And the king's son just turned white, you know. "Son, are you sure?" "Father. Father, I'm sure. But son, you know where she's taking us." "Oh, father." "Son," he said, "why don't we just send her, we'll ship her back from when she came. We'll just get her off our back right now." "Oh, but father," said the son, "if we don't keep our word, our kingdom can't stand. It'll collapse, it'll fall if we don't keep our word." "Father, to keep my word," he said, I'll just marry the old hag." "Son, do you know what you're saying?" "Yes, father. I was afraid it would come to this. I will marry the old hag." "Okay, what can you say? To the bare bone demand, a word's a word." And so the king said, "Okay, old hag, you can marry my son." "Well, be," she said, "wait just a minute," he said, "on two conditions." She said, "What are the conditions?" He said, "One, you must
You must be thrown into the magic fountain and survive it. And number two, you must pursue him. You must pursue him. She said, you mean just go, you know, take a little bath in the fountain and chase him? Aye, she said, I can run him down. I'll catch him. She said, take me to the water. You know, see your leader later. And they grabbed her and away they went. Guards on each side, bony ankle and a bony wrist. You know, one, two, three, up, up. And she didn't have a chance to catch her breath good because splash, she hit and down she went like a ton of bricks. She didn't have a chance to get her breath. And she was already out of breath when she started going down. There was no way she was going to make it. And her face was turning red. Her eyes were bulging. Her heart was double timing it. She knew she was still going down. She said, I was supposed to start going up. She started clawing, but nothing helped. Deeper, deeper, deeper. She said, I'm going to drown. No, I can't make it. This is what it comes to. I'm going to drown. I'm going to die. But all of a sudden, she felt herself beginning to go up. And she said, oh, now if I could just hold on. But she said, oh, I never will. And finally, you know, she was beginning to swoon. Her eyes were going completely out of her head. She thought she was going to explode. Finally, her head burst out of the water. She said, I made it. She said, I survived. And she looked down and she had the most beautiful dress on you've ever seen. And her skin, oh, she said, my skin, it's my fingers are straight. My scars, my wrinkles, and blonde? Don't blondes have more fun? She said, I'm beautiful. And she looked at the reflection of her face in the water and, oh, she said, I'm beautiful. She said, where's a mirror? And the guards helped this dainty little lady out and she went over and she stood in front of a full-length mirror. What a figure. Manicured nails and coiffured hair. My shoes, he made something beautiful. He made something beautiful out of my life, she said. Hey, you following me? Some of you knuckleheads never will catch on, but the most of you, I think, are catching it. You know what, guys and gals? He can make something beautiful out of your life. Can't he now? People come to me, guy. Now listen, man, don't think I've got the fat head. They come to me and say, Brother Dave, you're beautiful. Now, guys, I still have to stick my ear on and put on my hairpiece. And what I see every morning looking back at me ain't what you call beautiful, honey. And I look at that and I think, beautiful, yuck. But if anybody can see anything, that means love, Jesus style. Then I say, he can make something beautiful out of your life. He can. She was so happy, she didn't know what to do with herself. And the guards kept trying to get her to go to her room so she'd get a little rested. Because sunup, she had to pursue him. Well, in her room, there was a big mirror. And all night, she just looked. Oh, she said, wow, what a figure. I've never been so beautiful. I've never been so happy. She was out of sight, man. You guys couldn't have stood. You know, wow, what a doll chick, number one. And she just didn't hardly sleep any, actually. Matter of fact, she didn't even lay down until before you knew it. Rap, 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 knock, knock, knock on the door. And who do you think but the guard said, time to pursue the king's son. She says, oh, later. I'm sleepy. Sun up. Time to pursue the king's son. But I didn't sleep last night. You know, like the girls each morning when it's breakfast time, you know. Okay, they said, then you don't get to marry him. Oh, wait just a minute, she said. I'm going to marry him. Where is he? She stepped out in that radiant beauty. Even the guards couldn't believe it. You know, wow, what a doll, you know, man. She said, now show me to the king's son. And she went down and turned the little corner in the corridor, and there he sat on a white horse. What a prince. What a beautiful guy. She looked at him and her heart So what if she hadn't slept? That didn't matter. She said, wow, you're beautiful. You know, you are. So, where's my horse? He said, you don't get one. She said, you mean, I'm supposed to pursue you on a horse and me on bare feet? He said, that's about the size of it. Well, no, that's just not fair. He said, okay, you don't have to marry me. She said, wait a minute. I didn't say I wasn't going to run. She said, I'll run. Here I come, and she jumped for him, but it's too late. He jumped on that horse, and away, there wasn't a chance one, not a chance one, that she'd catch him. Way out there, man, way down there, sitting on his horse, and come on, I'm worth it. Here she came. Boy, those shoes weren't made for running, you know. They were good looking, but glass slippers just don't get the job done, you know. Well, you so far, I can't catch you. He said, I'm worth it. And oh, when he'd say that, it just tear her heart up. Wow, yeah, I'll get you. And away she went, boy, kicking off shoes. Who needs them? They weren't made for running. Boy, she would hike that little dress up, and boy, he turned out in the briar patch. Her shoes were too far back. She looked out there and she said, hey, wait just a minute. You think for 1 minute that me, barefooted, am going to tear my dress up and my feet up chasing you out there in the briar patch? And now look in his eye when he said, I'm worth it. She says, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And boy, all 4 feet in the middle of the briar patch, she's clawing, and she took off after him. And just about the time she got him, he's gone again. Up the mountain. She said, look at me. My dress is shredded. My feet are whipped. I'm tired. I'm looking more like my old self all the time. You think I'm going to go up there after you? He said, I'm worth it. I'm going to get you. And up the mountain she went, clawing rocks, going up 2 feet, falling back one. But she managed. Just when she crawled over the rock, you know, the last top rock. Bruised, bleeding, cut feet, blistered and burning and tired and legs. Her holes were shredded. She looked horrible. And he was sitting out in the middle of a burning plateau desert. She said, do you think that I, who have gone through the briar patch, up the mountain, you think I'm going to follow you out there? And she said, he said, I'm worth it. That look in his eye. She said, I'm going to get you. And boy, she hit that dirt and sand was flying. It looked like a boondoggy. A dune buggy. I got my tongue tangled up. She was going to get him this time. Nothing, but the sand got deeper and it got hotter, and she is knee deep in this loose sand. You know, like down here on this road. She couldn't go in it. She fell, and oh, the sand was hot and just soiled what was left of her garments. And sand stuck all over her sweaty body. And she got tried to brush off, and she looked at him. There he was, just 100 yards from her, and she started walking. She said, don't move. I'm coming. She fell on her face again, and it was hot. And this time, she didn't have strength to hardly get up, and she did, but she was only on her knees, and she crawled, man. And she fell again, and her strength was going so fast. Every time she fell, it was harder to get up. And she went down again, and her face planted deep in the sand, and she lifted her face, not able to lift her body, and she looked and she said something, and she died. She died. And a little whirlwind, symbolic of something, spun vigorously over her dead body. Just a little one. And the king's son came back on his horse. And he got down off of the horse and he looked at her dead body. He spoke to the wind and he said, "Oh wind, oh wind," what were her last words? Those last words, what were they? And the wind spoke and said, "O king, live forever." These are her last words. When she looked up at you and she lifted her finger, she said, "I have loved thee in life, and I shall but love thee in death. And I'll praise thee as long as thou lendest me breath. And I'll say when death's dew lies cold on my brow, if I've ever loved you, sweet Jesus, I love you now." And the wind said, and she died, O king, she died. And the king walked over. And he stooped down, and brother, doesn't he have to stoop low for some of us? And he touched her brow and removed death's dew. And she sat up, dazed a little bit. It seemed like, what's happened? And her eyes caught a glimpse of him standing that close. And she grabbed him with both hands before he could move. And she said, "I got you." And he couldn't help but smile as he wiped the tears of the moments before from his eyes. And he said, "I love you." And he put her up on his horse, and he got on the horse too. And away they rode into the little cloud of dust that followed. They went off into the forever after to live happily ever after. I mean, ever after. Crazy story. I mean, brother, what are you going to do? You going to tell stories at camp? I wasted my time coming. Yeah, well, knucklehead, listen. You see, there's more to it than some little fairy tale. Ask some of these who followed it. You see, there is a fountain, and it's filled with blood. Blood. And it's drawn from Emmanuel's vein, and sinners and hags plunged beneath that flood lose all their guilty stains. Oh, man. Have you survived the fountain? Not everybody survives. You know, most people are willing to settle for a mansion over the hilltop. Some want to build my mansion next door to Jesus. I don't want to say, I mean, get it close. Listen, guys and gals, hang the mansion on the wall. Make your goal, make your life, make your pursuit of happiness not some mansion on a hilltop. Make your love Jesus. And if you say, "I want your son, Father. I want to marry him. I want to be his bride," there are two conditions. You must survive the fountain of blood, and then you must pursue him. Oh, we got a lot of people who have survived the fountain. If you don't believe it, just ask them. I'm one of the beautiful people. Don't you get tired of this plastic generation of Christians? Don't you get tired of it? Times I turn on my television and I sit there and I look at these people who have never changed the lifestyle they were living in sin when they say they found Jesus, and they still live in the same old lifestyle. I'm going to tell you something, mister. If you survive the fountain, you're not just going to be beautiful. If you're going to have him, you're going to have to pursue him. And where he leads you and you follow, brother, it's going to take you a long ways from where you started. Amen. Yeah. But you know what happened? A whole bunch of you, maybe last year, maybe at this camp, whenever, it doesn't matter, you plunged beneath that flood and you were made a beautiful people. But in the moments that followed, in the days or the year that followed, when he led you to the briar patch, you backed off and you said, oh, no, 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 no. I'm not going to get in that briar patch. Because if I follow you there, the kids are going to laugh at me. No, no, no. No, sir, I'm not. No. But some of you, I'm going to get you. And you're the ones that really make this message worth telling. And you jump in there with all 4 feet and away you go. I want you. And there's nobody that can love like kids, you know. Like old Solomon. Fall in love when you're young. Don't wait till you're 90. Hey, sweetheart. Fall in love when you're kids. Go ahead. I'm going to tell you something. You better thank God 1,000 times, campers, that while you're young and while your heart's tender before God, you can hear a message, whether it's me or 1,000 thousands of other ministers, if you can hear the gospel that'll stir that heart, thank God 1,000 times you felt the stir in your heart. Oh, some of them, they make it through the briar patch, and for the life of me, I don't understand why after they get through the briar patch, they're not willing to climb the mountain. Well, I guess maybe they think they've already done enough. I followed you through the briar patch, that's enough. If you want me, come get me. But that wasn't the deal. It's if you want him, go get him. We're always saying, Jesus, do it for me. You know, guys smoking. I watch these parents, you know, they tell their kids, you know, puff, puff, he's sucking on his cigarette, you know, suck, suck. Son, you shouldn't, suck, suck. You shouldn't smoke that marijuana stuff. Suck, suck. That's pure hogwash. Pure hogwash. Guys and gals, somewhere, somehow, learn one simple lesson in this life. If your own parents fail you, Jesus never will. So if your parents blow the scene entirely, don't say, well, that gives me an excuse to go to hell. If you want an excuse to go to hell, just go. There's no one going to stop you. Because I'm not going to drag you kicking and screaming into heaven, honey. If you want to go to hell, go to hell. But there's no one here that's going to make you go to heaven. Well, let's get back to the message. You get on the mountaintop. You survive the mountain. You're there. And then you look at the last stretch. You know, you can't do it. You can do it. You see, the objective is not so much to get him, but are you willing to die for him? What did Jesus teach us? If you seek to save this life, you lose it. But if for his sake you lose it, you what? You gain it. Isn't that crazy? Instead of finders, keepers, losers, weepers, it's finders, weepers, losers, keepers. You got to lose it to keep it. But what's this story? I mean, she dies. Of course she dies. There's not one of you in this building that have ever pursued Jesus and caught him until you finally had to die in the process. There's not a preacher, there's not a pastor, there's not an evangelist, there's not a counselor, there's not a camper who has ever been wed to the King's Son until you were willing to give up your cause to take up his. You can't do your thing in his thing, campers. You've got to realize tonight it's one thing to survive the fountain, but camper buddy, if you ever intend to be married to the King's Son, it's going to be because you gave up everything. You were willing to lay down your life. You said, if it takes it, then here it is. I'll go all the way until death do us join. My God. Oh, God. till death join us. Death must join us. And yet we keep on kicking and screaming. And we're saying, I'm dead, but you're stirring up such a mess. Who cares? If you're dead, then live unto him. Live unto him. If you're dead to your ways, live unto his ways. You see, campers, if you've loved him in life, you'll love him in death. And on the bank of the Vamcote River, Dave Reaver gave up his own causes, man. I laid him down at the feet of Jesus, broken pieces. A heart that was crushed like little toys that were wasted and forgotten. I laid them all there. And I said, God, that's all I've got to show for my life. Just pieces. But he took those pieces. And he put them all back together. And I've praised him as long as he's lent me breath. And I said then, and I'll say now, until death's dew lies cold on my brow, if I've ever loved you, sweet Jesus, I love you now. Do you love him? You see, campers, it's one thing to be saved. But have you received that fullness of his Spirit until you're alive and vibrant in the ways of Christ? Just sit tight a minute. I'm going to ask you a question. And there's one thing I can always count on from campers. They'll level with you in honesty. They're as frank as I am, and you know I come straight at you. Now I want you to come straight at me. I want to know tonight, campers, how many of you tonight, this very moment in your life, you know that you stopped at the briar patch and God being your helper. You're going to plunge all 4 feet in and tear after him until you join with him in life. How many of you tonight will admit your desperate need? I want you to stand. And by that, say, Brother Dave, I stopped at the briar patch. Quietly stand. Don't move the chairs if you can help it. Brother Dave, I stopped at the briar patch. I want to tell you something, Brother Decap. Right there stands an army. Maybe I should say, here comes the bride. Stopped at the briar patch. Now in the presence of God and these witnesses, if you don't mean from the depths of your heart what you're standing there representing, sit down. If you stand because someone else did, sit down. We don't need you. If you're not willing to be honest with God, don't bother trying to fake me out. Now's the time you have to swallow your pride and swallow your gum. Now's the time when you have to swallow your own causes and be reverent and humbled before God. Now's the time when you've got to look at yourself as a failure, for that's what you've been, right? You stopped. I want you kids standing very quietly and try not to knock the chairs around too much. I want you to join me. I want you to come stand right here, right up against this wooden platform. Stay on the concrete if you can. I want to ask you a question, campers, while you're coming. Now you be honest again.
How many of you guys and gals would say by a raised hand, Brother Dave, I understood what that message was saying, and it was for me. I understood it. You see your hands. Beautiful. Thank you. Keep coming all the way up, just as hard up against that as you can. If you step up, it makes it hard for me to see, so just remain right there. Can you keep coming? Just keep spreading out. Spreading out to the sides a little. There you go. Campers, you are beautiful people. You understood that tonight, didn't you? You know it wasn't just a fairy tale. And a lot of people don't bother to wait to hear the end of it. They either turn you off or walk out, or they're not interested in the whole thing. This girl understood it. You understood it. I don't know how else to say what I've tried to say except the way I've said it, campers. You've got to go into the briar patch. You got to climb the mountains. You've got to pursue him in the hot desert, man. It's not easy, but where does it say it'd be a bed of roses? Kids, you can go right on through your life living a half-hearted, half-witted Christian life that doesn't mean anything to anybody, including Christ. Or maybe tonight. Maybe tonight. Maybe right now, God, let it be that the sellout of your soul to Jesus really occurs. Maybe tonight, some of you guys who've just gone along with a crowd, you keep the pastor off your